All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 36, which is also Episode 68 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and with me as always is someone who has recently been reanimated, Hugh.
Yep, absolutely. With new exciting colors and everything. Yeah, improved colors, better frame rate, all that stuff.
Nice. So, what's been going on?
Not a ton. So, like, a while ago, I scanned this catalog. I scan a lot of catalogs. And this was the Electronics Boutique August-September 1997 catalog. And I just never got around to posting it because I didn't like the catalog very much. Mm-hmm. So I just posted that this week, mostly because the catalog has a lot of Barney in it. I know you may be confused, but it was 1997, I guess. You have the Final Fantasy VII launch, but most of the cover is dedicated to Barney. Because at the time, Microsoft had released, like, an interactive Barney toy.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah. It looks kind of sketchy, really. And the thing I got out of this catalog that I found interesting is, if you want to know how the Sega Saturn was doing in 1997... it had less space in the catalog than the Super Nintendo.
In 97. That's awesome. Yeah, I flipped through this a little bit. They really liked their CD-ROMs in 1997.
Half the catalog is CD-ROM.
Yeah. A bunch of CD games I never even heard of, too, for PC.
Yeah, there's a lot of forgettable games out there. Certainly, there's like a lot of weird... I was sort of surprised by the number of football games that I forgot existed. Mm-hmm. You know, Terry Bradshaw's Fantasy Football, for example. I think he runs ads for something with that same name today.
That's really strange. Yeah. I didn't flip all the way. Now I'm scrolling down even further. Yeah.
The most interesting game is... something called Forbes Corporate Warrior. Compete for wealth and power in the corporate world where business is war. So what genre of game do you think this is?
Oh, man. I mean, it sounds like it should be like an RPG game or a sim type game.
Yep, first person shooter.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I'd never heard of this game. So I Googled it and watched a video. It's a first-person shooter.
I'm going to make this joke. I was going to say it could be a really horrible date simulator.
Yes, really horrible. Could be a dating sim at that point. Like, yeah, corporate warrior.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of controllers in this catalog as well.
Yeah. A lot of off-brand controllers that are going to break.
And... Nintendo 64 being marketed right next to Super Nintendo 2, which I don't remember that happening, but I guess it did.
Yeah, I mean, Super Nintendo probably still sold okay in 1997. People probably weren't buying new systems, but I bet games are doing well. I mean, so, it's 2 years later. So, 2 years after the PlayStation 4 launch, were people buying PlayStation 3 games, do you think?
Yes. Yeah, I would say yeah. Barely, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still buying what's the dance game? Just Dance.
Yeah, Just Dance. Yeah, I mean, they made Just Dance for the Wii last year. No, I'm serious.
I know, they did. I bet they do it again.
They did. Actually, no, I've been watching. They did not do it this year.
That's disappointing.
Last year they made some comment that there were a lot of people who still buy Just Dance around Christmas time every year, probably because it's like I bet you it's like a New Year's thing for a lot of families.
Probably. Yeah, that's a good point.
And this year, if you're being reasonably responsible, you're not having a big New Year's party.
No, please don't. Has anyone ported Just Dance to the 2600 yet? I feel like that needs to happen.
No, I mean... The music would be kind of hard. Like, I don't know how the latest, Ariana Grande song would sound on the 2600.
It would be pretty funny. Pretty annoying.
So that's it, man. What have you been up to?
Not much. You know, all the new systems launched this week, the new Xbox and new PlayStation system, and that means I currently do not own a current-gen system. I'm completely retro at this point.
Well, the Switch is a current-gen system.
Kinda. I mean,
well, it's Nintendo's most current system.
Yeah, that is true. But I've really just been playing our Game Club games. I think I took a little bit of a break. I don't know if I'll end that break soon on new games and just kind of keeping a retro right now. You know, I have all these retro toys, like, you know, the analog Mega SG, and, you know, parts to build a Mister and stuff like that. So I think I'm really going to dive into just keeping it retro for a little bit. Who knows? We may record next week and I may be into a new game. So who knows? We'll see.
You may have bought a PlayStation 5 and are playing
Bugsnax.
I don't know what. Resident Evil 8 or whatever they have on it.
No, I'm going to hold off for a little bit. Just because, seriously, I have a stack of Switch games and a stack of PS4 games that even if I stop playing games now, I don't know when I would get through all these games. So I just need to take a break on that that spending, you know. Play a little catch up. But feel like diving into the news?
Yeah, we got some news here. Nintendo's new Game & Watch hacked a day before its official release.
No one is shocked.
Nope. So where did he get this one?
Well, I think, you know, if you work in a store or something, you know, you could kind of get it the day before. I've had Amazon send me stuff a day before it's actually been released. But the USB-C adapter on this thing does not connect to the CPU at all. It only connects to power. So when you want to hack this stuff, you got to really know your stuff. Really, I don't know, you wouldn't solder to the motherboard, but, you know, your connections would be directly to the motherboard.
So it looks like Nintendo, I would assume they did it on purpose, either to be cheap or to make it much, much harder to hack the system. I mean, I can't imagine the hardware in this is good for anything other than some very basic emulators.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the 8-bit systems, but and who knows how much memory is in this anyway. But, you know, I watched some videos on this thing. I did not get one, but I would definitely consider it because, you know, it has the first two Mario games, not Mario USA, but Mario 1 and the ROM hack, which is called Mario 2. And there's a lot of little hidden secrets in it. It also has a little mode where if you you could just use it as a clock, and every minute Mario will, you know, run by and break the bricks to make it look like to change the time. Uh-huh. So, you know, a little fun stuff like that. But
don't you have Mario on your Switch already? Switch Online or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for me to buy this thing. I have Mario on lots of things, so.
Is that all it's on here is Super Mario Brothers?
Yeah, the first two, and that's it. But again, it's a little bit different. You should definitely watch a video on some of the hidden secrets they put in this thing. There's a lot.
I don't see anything about Super Mario 2 on here. I just see Super Mario 1 on their official site.
No, see, the second Mario, the Lost Levels game is on there.
Oh, the Lost Levels. Oh, well, I don't count that.
Yeah, the ROM hack. But yeah, so who knows what people will do with this. Probably not that much, or I don't know. Looks like it's pretty well designed, though. They have a picture of it all opened up. Oh, what else do we have? Some non-news, but it's kind of, if you actually watch the video, it's way cooler than it sounds. Caterpillar video featuring life-size game board puts a new spin on Pac-Man. So the giant construction machine company Caterpillar made a dirt version of Pac-Man. And they actually play Pac-Man in this with some Caterpillar machines or whatever you would call them.
Yeah. Yeah, their home office is right by here. They did not build this Pac-Man thing by the home office. This looks like it's out in Peoria. I would prefer it if you made it like a... I don't like paintball. I've never played paintball.
Mm-hmm.
But if you made a giant Pac-Man maze and there was like paintball, I could go for that.
That would be pretty cool. That might be a fun spin on paintball. Somehow there's power pellets and... I don't know, you turn blue somehow. I don't know how all that would work, but that could be kind of cool.
Yeah, I never really got the appeal of paintball, but I guess there's plenty of other hobbies. I guess maybe people who like paintball don't understand the appeal of retro gaming.
Well, I was in the 90s, I was actually on a paintball team. We actually did really good, and then I just kind of fell out of it. I don't know. I'm not a gun person, but paintball is pretty fun. It's a crazy workout. If I played now, I would probably have a heart attack. Toys for Bob producer wants to revive an unconventional Nintendo 64 game. Yeah, so this is a little article about he wants to revive, what is the game again? Space Station Silicon Valley. Have you played that game?
No, I don't even know that I've heard of it.
Neither had I, and then just a little bit ago, I watched a video on it, and it looks fantastic. They send a spaceship out into space in the year 2001. It immediately disappears, and it comes back in the year 30,000, except it's on a trajectory to smash into Earth, and this one crazy doctor, mad scientist, whatever, and his robot get jettisoned to the space station to try to help stop it. But since then, all the animals and stuff have evolved and not morphed, but I guess combined with the computers and stuff that are on the space station. And you're the robot you bring with you. When you crash, he breaks all apart and all you have is this microchip. So as the microchip, you walk around and you take over these animals and solve puzzles on how to save the space station and to figure out what happened. And I really want to play the game. It looks fantastic. I guess it was a bit of a sleeper hit that people are really discovering now. And yeah, so this guy wants to bring it back. And I say, after I watch that video, I was like, yes, please. It looks great. I would say kind of a mix between Horizon Zero Dawn and Mario Odyssey, if that's possible.
All right.
Let's see, what are the prices for that on eBay? Let's see. Like $35, $20.
All right, it's not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad at all. So yeah, that would be cool if he brought that back. What else do we have here in our notes?
Like a article that's about the history of the Dizzy series.
Yeah, the Oliver twins. Did you get a chance to go through this one at all?
I did a bit. I mean, I'm kind of familiar with Dizzy. I was never really huge into them, into the series. I mean, here in America, they were always unlicensed games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe there were some like official releases later on, but I always remember them as being like unlicensed releases that like you had to buy from a guy in an alley or something.
Yeah, yeah. In Detroit, we'd always have to go to Ontario for that stuff. Ontario flea markets were great for unlicensed Nintendo games.
Yeah, I think they were briefly sold in some stores, but Nintendo eventually would put pressure on retailers to not carry these games.
Mm-hmm. So they just didn't want to pay the Nintendo tax? Is that what the deal was?
That's exactly what the deal was.
So it's like Tengen, but... Yeah, they started their company by making a deal with their parents saying, give us a year and we'll make video games to make more money than you, or we'll go to college after that year. And I don't think they went to college. But yeah, pretty good article there on inverse.com. What is next?
Let's see, another... kind of crazy bootleggy type of system, the RGB20. So this is a little handheld system that you just run whatever you feel like on it.
Yeah. And on the back, so it actually looks like the Game & Watch kind of color palette in terms of the case. It has the D-pad, the analog stick, start select. You have your L3 and R3 underneath your four main buttons. But on the back of it, it also has triggers like built into this square boxy little handheld. And it has built-in Wi-Fi, so you don't have to take out your micro SD card to load games onto it. I don't know why that's easier, but I guess it is. It looks like a nice little device. Of course, you really don't want to be buying stuff on AliExpress. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I still never buy anything from there. It's like $90 on AliExpress. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. Plus your identity possibly being stolen, whatever the cost of that is.
Yeah, I mean, your ID's already been stolen. How the Dreamcast revolutionized gaming. This is one of the things you have to, like, click 10 times to read it.
Yeah, it has a few pop-ups.
Hard pass.
CBR.com does that for some reason, and they're a pretty well-known website, but the TLDR on this is the Dreamcast was the first to have DLC, which I really didn't know, and apparently it just downloaded to your VMU, so I don't know if that's like 8K of DLC you're getting.
Yeah, I think it was, like, I mean, Shenmue had some stuff like that, right? I bought Shenmue, like, long after the servers were disconnected, so.
So what would you get? Just, like, a little skin, maybe?
I think it was related to the vending machine game where you get, like, toys that then you can look at.
Interesting. Well, there you go. So that's how the Dreamcast revolutionized gaming. A site we go to every week, RetroRGB, the Ultra PIF, a multi-region Nintendo 64 PIF replacement. So the PIF is the region lock chip. So this just opens up your Nintendo 64, I guess, if you really, really know how to desolder stuff.
Yeah, why would you want to do this?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, there's got to be some kind of market to it, but. Yeah. And it's $130.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think it's a neat project. If the whole goal is to be able to play region-locked games, it's probably cheaper just to get a import system.
Or an EverDrive.
Yes. Unless some of them have some kind of hardware region-locking, which this is trying to get around.
Yeah.
Because the region lock in Nintendo 64 is really just cartridge slot.
Really? You can't plug in like a European cartridge to a US Nintendo 64?
No, it's different. They have different, the cartridge has different, like, I don't want to say holes, but different grooves, so that it doesn't physically fit in.
Okay.
But with a Game Shark, you can just put the Game Shark in, and the Game Shark, the top end of the Game Shark's open, so you can put like any cartridge into that as a pass-through. That's why I'm not... I guess I should have read more on this earlier.
I mean, it has some kind of encryption in there, so it's decrypting somehow. There's some kind of region key, but... Yeah, I guess I just didn't really know that was an issue on Nintendo 64. On Screen Rant, it's something I don't know too much about. Zelda Theory... Deku Link's dark backstory and Majora's Mask explain. So
you mean the thing they explain in the game?
Do they though? It seems like they leave.
Yeah, they kind of do. I mean, there's dialogue with his father, and then there's reference. There's also references to it in the ending. I didn't think it was really a secret.
It's not a big mystery. Well,
Yeah.
If you thought it was, Screen Rant's got you covered. Majora's Mask is... I really should go back and try to get back into it, because every time I try to play...
Yeah, it's a
really great game. I remember loving it back in the day, and every time I try to play it now, I just kind of get a little bit bored. I don't know why.
Do you have the 3DS version?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
So I just need to give it some time.
Yeah, that was my favorite Zelda game until Breath of the Wild came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember really loving it, so I just need to give it another chance again. And then a game no one loved, Zelda's CDI Reanimated brings together 200 animators to celebrate the worst ever Zelda cutscenes. Oof.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess. It's an impressive feat.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have a CDI, and there's probably no copy protection on CDI discs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I assume you can just burn a CDI disc to just a regular plain CD.
That's what I'm assuming. I mean, I never tried just because I never had any reason.
I guess I could play this then.
Would you want to?
Some of the... I'd like to try it. Some of these animations are pretty good.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's got to be better than the original. Those were just totally phoned in.
Let's see. I completed my 7-year quest to play Thieves Guild.
Yeah. So Thieves Guild is a BBS door game. And it also had a front end, which means to me, because I've never played a door game with a front end, what it means to me is you would either dial in and then exit out of your modem app, and this new front end would take over that would give you, you know, EGA or CGA graphics, or you would just dial in with the front end. But this is a great kind of history and retrospective of this game. And this guy started playing it in 2013 and finally finished the whole thing in 7 years. That's dedication.
Yeah, definitely.
Were you into BBSs back in the day?
No, I was not.
There are a bunch of door games.
My aversion to talking to people online goes very, very far back.
I don't blame you. I just used it for files and games. I loved door games like Trade Wars.
Ten things you didn't know about the Nintendo Game Boy.
Yeah, and there were a few things here that I didn't know. Most of them I did.
Let's see. I'm going to go through it right now and see which of these I knew. It was incredibly durable. Yeah, I knew that. It was the first console to visit space. I might have known that. Wasn't Nintendo's first handheld. Yeah, everybody knew that.
Yeah.
Iconic Nintendo boot screen was actually loaded from the cartridges. Yeah, I would have assumed that.
Selfies. I did not know that.
Okay. Yeah, that's not, because there's nothing on, like Genesis, same thing. Like that Sega logo is done by the cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
It could take selfies before selfie. Okay, yeah, no kidding. So could a Polaroid. 16-person local multiplayer I knew about. It was one of only two Nintendo handhelds not to have a Pokemon game as its bestseller. Yeah, sure. It was sold under a different name in Korea. Had incredible battery. These are all things you knew if you owned it. It could be used to catch fish.
See, I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know about the fishing pole accessory.
Sonar.
I just would have thought, like, you know, whatever it is. Seems like a Japan-only thing.
Yeah. I did not know about the pocket sonar. I always forget about Korea having different licensing for Nintendo stuff, and I did not know about the... Well, I guess I just never thought about the icon being loaded from the cartridge. A very, very long article. How Sierra was captured, then killed by massive accounting fraud.
Yeah. I heard about this. This was on the Retro Hour podcast, which I always recommend. They had a long interview with Ken Williams, and he relays a story that's more or less the same as this article.
Yeah, really sad. Just, you know, nice, honest, good people, the Williamses, just trying to make games and run a company and keep people employed, and accounting fraud by not them just destroyed the company.
Yeah, well, and they sold it, right, to someone who then turns out had massive accounting problems, which is probably why he was able to buy the company in the first place.
Probably, yeah, yeah. But really sad, because that was my favorite company back in the day. Yeah, it's got to hurt when you put that much time into something and then someone comes around and ruins it. But I definitely recommend the read. It's a long read, and listen to the his interview on the Retro Hour. I think he recently did the same interview on the Retronauts as well.
Yeah.
Replicade has a mini Dragon's Lair.
Yes, mini Dragon's Lair. How mini? It's 1/6 the size. I don't know what that means. You need to put like feet and inches on this thing.
It is 4.2 inches. Oh, no, it's a 4.2 inch screen. Yeah, there's nothing to compare it to. They don't put it next to anything.
Yeah, they put it next to, like, the box that it comes with.
Yeah. So if the screen is 4.2 inches, I'm going to say it is 16 inches, 18 inches tall, maybe?
That seems too big. That seems way too tall. I think this is the size of one of these, like, $20 or $30 miniature cabinets you can get at, like, Target or Walmart.
Probably, yeah.
Like the My Arcade cabinets. I think it's probably about that size. They got to put it next to like a Coke can or something.
I know. There's absolutely... It's either a white background or the stuff it came with.
Yeah, and so I like this thing's $120, and I think it's pretty small.
It comes with... What is it? Laserdisc player with remote. It comes with a mini Laserdisc player and a mini Laserdisc. I mean, they're not real, but still, that's hilarious. Not worth $120.
It's just too small.
And also, you could play Dragon's Lair on everything, I think.
Oh, everything. Yeah, for sure. It's on everything, literally everything.
Yeah. Still like that they did it, though, but I'm not...
No, I don't like the price. I definitely like the thing. I just don't like the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is next? Oh.
Here we got like two or three items left here. How the NES conquered a skeptical America in 1985.
Yeah.
You can probably get this from Game Over, Press Start to Continue also.
Yeah, yeah. So, and of course, my internet, my Ars Technica, which is on Ars Technica spinning for me right now. It reloaded and stopped loading for some reason, but I watched it, so I remember most of it. Yeah, what's her name? It's, is this Gail? Is that her name? Her name is Gail Tilden, and she came in early on Nintendo, for the NES launch, and she created Nintendo Power and just helped with all the marketing and getting it into stores and making it so people would want to buy, even though Atari, you know, the big crash, and no one really thought there was going to be video games in America for some reason anymore. She kind of helped fix all that, and it's an interview with her talking about it all. But yeah, exact same story in that Game Over.
Yeah, Game Over is a really good book. Yeah, if you get a chance to read that one. And of course, Console Wars talks about it a bit too, but I think Game Over does a better job talking about how like Nintendo broke into the U.S. market the way they did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this goes through all of that, through the New York launch, and then through the Nintendo Power launch. Yeah, really good. I really like this War Story series that Ars Technica does. We talk about it a lot on this show, and I hope they keep doing these interviews.
So if you have an extra $375 sitting around, you can get the Darksoft Multi-Namco System 1 kit. So this is to play
Galaga
arcade 88. Games?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So the Namco System 1 was like what Galaga 88 was released on, the chipset. And I really don't know what else, at least what else anyone would want to play. I'm sure System 16 has all the games listed, but
They do, and it's not bad. I mean, the problem is that there's a lot of like Japanese exclusive games on this list. So you get Galaga 88, of course. Get Splatterhouse Arcade.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of ones that you'd be psyched about. Pac-Mania.
Mm.
Dragon Spirit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. There's a Shove It the Warehouse game clone for it.
Yeah, so there might be someone that
a lot of
really...
sports games, a lot of arcade sports games.
Okay. Yeah. I really like the Darksoft stuff. I really like what he does, but you know, I have his CPS2 kit and his his Neo Geo kit, but or his cart, but yeah.
But I think some of the appeal to this could also be homebrew. Like if you wanted to write in our, you know, a game for this hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we have one more article, and it kind of ties into, we're kind of making a little topic out of it. So the article is DOSBox Pure. So, you know what? Do we want to just talk about DOSBox first before we get into DOSBox Pure?
Okay.
So DOSBox is probably one of my favorite applications ever written. It is a DOS emulator that does just so much more. It also emulates Sound Blaster and AdLib and different graphics modes and different CPUs. So you could pick anything from 286, 386, you know, through Pentium. I think it goes to Pentium 3, maybe. But for most of those, even if you're on like an ARM or maybe even PowerPC processor, it'll emulate those chips for you. And you can use
them too. There weren't a lot of DOS games made for PowerPC.
Hmm?
If the idea is you're playing DOS games, I'm having a hard time thinking of DOS games that would be for PowerPC.
No, but this emulates the CPU and stuff. So you would, you know, if you were on an older Mac that had PowerPC, that was my point, that it would emulate the CPU. Or if you're on ARM or something like that, like Raspberry Pi.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And yes, you can run on Raspberry. I mean, I've run it on Raspberry Pi. It even has a Chrome plugin if you want to run it from your browser.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. What a great application. I mean, for nostalgia's sake, I just, you know, the first time I used it, I just booted up DOS and installed Windows 3.11 just to do it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I've played through most of the Sierra games on DOSBox. It's just, to me, almost an infallible product. It's just amazing what it does.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly use it. I played through a couple of the Gold Box Dungeons & Dragons games on DOSBox.
Mm-hmm.
And Sherlock Holmes Volume 3, because that was the only game not released on any of the CD systems. And I wanted to, for whatever reason, wanted to say that I finished all the Sherlock Holmes FMV games.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you can put that on my headstone or something now.
Yeah.
I recently used it to play through the DOS version of Ys.
Really? Which,
yeah. It's an interesting version. I mean, it's pretty close to the Sega Master System version.
Okay.
But that was
have
more
you ever
just
done
for
anything?
My weird completionist. Like, I want to finish that series.
Have you done anything weird with it? You know, there's so many modes you could put it in and you know, really, really tweak its settings. Did you ever get into any of that, or do you just kind of install and play?
Just install stuff and play. I don't get too crazy with it. Mostly because I have plenty of other crazy projects that I can do dumb stuff with. So this is really like, I want to play some old RPG that has never been ported or updated.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned in previous shows that you might have a winter project pretty much based off DOSBox.
Yeah, I was thinking about making a dedicated DOSBox or a dedicated Apple II system. Because I have some spare I have at least one spare Raspberry Pi, possibly two, if I look through my drawers. And I thought that might be a good winter project, depending how bad winter is this year.
Yeah, and a Raspberry Pi can pretty much play any DOS or Apple II game with ease.
Yeah, if you think about it, like, you would have... DOS games would have... I was just talking about, like, the 1997 catalog here. And you still had DOS games in 1997. Yeah, they would say they were for Windows, but they're actually kicking off into DOS mode. But really, you're kind of getting near the end of DOS games by around the Pentium 3.
Yep.
So the Raspberry Pi is much more powerful, right, than a Pentium 3.
Yeah. There wasn't multi-core back then, so...
You know, and RAM was really, really expensive. If you had 16 meg of RAM, that was a lot of RAM, right? The Pi is well beyond that.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember right, I usually put my DOS box in, like, you know, some kind of Pentium mode, maybe like Pentium 100 or 133 or something, and with 64 meg RAM, so more RAM than you probably would have had back then, but still in the realm of possibility. You know, so, right.
Although with DOS, the amount of RAM doesn't matter. You could give it, you know, whatever maximum 16-bit addressable RAM is. And it really wouldn't have mattered because it's the first 640K that you can run out of.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're still dealing with DOS, and DOSBox hides a lot of this from you. Like, I've never really had to edit config settings too much, but you know, if you play DOS games back in the day, you know the misery of, like, trying to figure out how to load drivers so that they don't chew up too much of the first 640K.
Yeah,
and everything beyond that is extended memory. But that was always a problem. Like, sometimes you would get out of memory errors running a game, even though you have well beyond the required megabytes free.
Yeah, until they had HiMem and EMM 3D6. Is that what the two system files were called that you had to use?
Yeah, and you'd have to have stuff like your CD driver loaded, right? And CD drivers weren't small. So, like, CD, mouse, joy, anything that you used had to, you know, as for input, or the CD drive, of course, had to go in the first 640K.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, DOSBox does a lot of this for you. Before I used DOSBox, I used... It was so stupid. I think I used DOS EMU. EMU DOS. And I did it because it was, like, you know, the best DOS software out there, like some blog post. And they rated that one as way better than DOSBox. Well, even at that time, this is probably, you know, 2012 or something like that. Or 2011 maybe. That blog post was years and years old. I didn't realize that till after. And even back then, like, DOSBox is just the best DOS EMU you could use.
Yeah. So I mostly used emulators. Not emulators, I'm sorry. Virtual PC. So create a virtual machine that then has actual DOS installed.
Yeah.
Which means Yeah, I did that before. Yeah, I did that. Microsoft Virtual PC has been around since the zeros.
Yeah.
So I would have used Virtual PC and then later VirtualBox, because Microsoft Virtual PC kind of, you know, Microsoft at this point more or less just has that around for, like, compatibility testing. They, like, I think it was Windows 7 that they bundled Virtual PC with, because if you wanted to run, like, Windows XP, they had something called, like, Windows XP mode, which was really just Virtual PC running basically a free copy of Windows XP Microsoft included with the OS. But VirtualBox started as an open source product, And it's weird. Like, it doesn't support old systems as well as virtual PC. But you can run DOS in there, and you can run, you know, Windows 3.1, Windows 95, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Are you saying you used to do that, and or do you almost exclusively use DOSBox now?
Well, now I haven't played DOS in a while, but I pretty much only use DOSBox now. Mm-hmm. There's just too much messing around, because virtual PC, you're getting all the baggage of, you know, old school managing config and memory and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you want to use like a joystick or something, you have to do like, you know, pass a USB device through to to the virtual machine, which, oh, by the way, USB isn't a thing on those machines. So if you try and pass a device through, it's a big, big nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You remember, like, even up to Windows 98, if you bought a USB device, you had to have a CD that came with it to install the driver for that device. Like, your USB port was basically unusable. Yeah. Really, until Windows 2000.
Yeah, about then. That's about right. Yeah, that's when it became the norm. And but yeah, I mean, in DOSBox, you're still installing the game. So if you have, like, you know, an 8-disc game, like some later King's Quest games, or, you know, High Octane or whatever you're playing, you're still installing them. You're still going through the sound setup and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But which is actually kind of fun the first time you do it for nostalgic reasons. But after you do it with one game, you're like, okay, I'm done with this. And that's really where where DOSBox Pure comes in, because it gives you a front end for RetroArch, LibRetro. I don't know if it's going to be standalone as well. And it comes out this winter. And like I said, yeah, it gives you a GUI. It also allows you just to load games from zip files. And really just...
Does it have like a database of games? So when you open a zip file, does it have like... is it basically... I guess my question is it... Does it have like configurations for games so you don't have to mess around with it much? Is that what it's doing to simplify things?
Exactly, yeah. And I think, I didn't read this part, but I'm assuming that there's like a DOS game pack, really DOS program pack called ExoDOS, that, you know, you could get on torrents and stuff like that. Not legit places that have really install batch files. And I'm assuming it's using settings or, you know, a config database from that or something similar to that. But yeah, so pretty soon we'll be able to, you know, one click play some DOS games, which will be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's an interesting product launch. I guess we will find out more as it, you know, becomes a real thing.
Yeah, and I really think it's going to motivate me to play more DOS games too. And even like Windows 3 games, you know, there's a lot of great Windows 3 games. I'm trying to see if there's more here that I'm forgetting. I mean, there's a ton more that Pure does, but yeah, we'll wait till we get to play around with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a DOSBox for Android too, but the reviews are kind of all over the place.
Open source stuff on Android always scares me that it's going to take my money somehow.
Yeah, DOSBox and Android just has an upfront pay for this. Like, it's not a free app.
Oh, okay.
I think they listed, I think DOSBox themselves listed as an unofficial port.
Okay. Any closing thoughts on it?
No, I mean, I'm sort of curious about that. I just realized now there's a Wii version, and I do have a Wii with a dead CD drive. So now I'm curious what that would look like.
You know, I think, and I could be remembering this wrong, but in one of the first emails we ever got on the show, someone recommended the Wii as a great DOS machine.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that would be a case. Doesn't the Wii have a power PC?
Yes, and the Wii also has keyboards because there was, I have a Wii keyboard.
That's awesome. So you'll be doing what I said. You'll be emulating x86 on PowerPC.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I have to figure out what I have to do to hack the Wii, though. It's probably, yeah, there's a Dreamcast one. I have a Dreamcast keyboard, come to think of it. Wait a minute. If DOSBox for Dreamcast supports the VGA box, then maybe I have a project.
Yeah, that could be really cool. So you would just burn a bunch of games to CD to play it on
Dreamcast? I don't know how you, I have to read this, and I don't know like how you would save games, for example.
Yeah.
maybe that's not a big deal. It's a big deal for me because I mostly play RPGs on it. But.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Should we get into some game club here?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
All right. Mine's listed first, so I guess I'll just start talking. I chose a Sorcerer's Apprentice for the 2600. And this is a game I think I have a cartridge somewhere. This is one of my most played 2600 games back in the day. You play as Mickey and you start out by shooting little magic dots, I guess, at falling stars and comets and meteors. And all this time below you in the sorcerer's, temple, wherever he's at, castle, hideout. I don't know where sorcerers live. Just like in Fantasia, the brooms are filling up the area with water, and you can either run into the brooms and they disappear so they don't fill the room with water with that one bucket that they have, or every time you hit a meteor with one of your magic little star things, a bucket appears, like a little magic bucket, and it helps empty the water from that other area. So yeah, there's kind of two game parts in one interacting together, and you get points by shooting things with your magic when you're in, you know, the top level with all the falling stars and stuff. And you get points for, stopping the magic brooms. And, this game plays really well, it has a few little quirks. Like when you're on the steps underground, sometimes, you'll fall off, which will make you go back to the top. To get down to the bottom, you walk off the screen on the top. Sometimes you could do that on accident. My only complaint is when you're, shooting the falling objects, after your, I'm just going to call it a bullet, whatever it is, leaves your magic wand or your finger, as you move right to left, it does also. And that could be really confusing at first. It could actually screw you up, even if you've played it as much as I have. This game, I think, has two different play modes, like an easy and hard mode, if I remember right. I always just pick the default. And as you play, it keeps getting faster and faster. It's actually really impressive how many sprites and how fast the 2600 can actually go. I think it has great graphics, really good sound, and especially for the 2600. And I really can't recommend this game enough. Now, 2600 games are really simple. So take that with a grain of salt. But I think it's fantastic. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I mean, I kind of got the impression it was maybe meant to be a kid's game.
The easy mode is definitely, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it has pretty good graphics for the 2600, obviously. I don't know. It's not very deep. I didn't get into it very much.
But, I mean, if you had this game on 2600 back in the day, I mean, I thought this was one of the best games back then. I was upset at other games not being as good as this one, even as a very young child. And it held up for me. And, on Genesis, there's Fantasia, which is what Sorcerer's Apprentice is from. But I'll talk about that after we talk about your game.
Yeah, I was just trying to see how much this thing goes for on eBay. Sorry.
I don't think very much, because it sold really well. Let's see.
No, people are asking like $16 for a loose card.
That's kind of a lot, yeah.
For 2600, yeah. I do not have this cartridge.
Yeah, I have it in a box somewhere. It is a good one. I do really like this game. There's one buy it now for $8.25. That's not too bad. I think this would be one of those games that in a store, like if you have a retro store around you, it'll be pretty cheap. I think stores, you know, don't sell many Atari 2600 games, and so they really kind of blow them out cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You could get a box copy for $98.
Yeah, no thanks.
It's the PAL version. But yeah, let's talk about your game.
So since we were doing Mickey Mouse themed games, I decided to do Castle of Illusion, which I played on the Genesis. I know that there's many different versions. That's just my preferred one. And yeah, I think it's a really outstanding game. I mean, it's a platformer, but it's not difficult. I guess you could argue this is also a game for kids, because the most difficult stages are towards the end, and they're really not that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has an easy mode that's like fewer stages and easier. But what I was shocked by is like how good the graphics are in this game. Like, it's a fairly early Genesis game, but like the sprites are all very detailed, and I just really like the color palettes they chose.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the big thing. Like, I think they really did a great job in the color department. And it's a game you can play through in about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. It's not very long. Also, really great soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I enjoy the soundtrack a lot. Boss fights are, again, all pretty easy. You know, you've got, I don't know, maybe the Jack-in-the-Box guy is a little tricky, because you have to kind of get lucky with the timing on that one. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you don't have enough time to actually go hit him in the few seconds that he's vulnerable. And then the last boss fight kind of involves a lot of kind of luck. Like, if you're in the right place to hit the boss at the right time, you'll hit them. Otherwise, you'll miss on that round. So, overall, though, pretty easy. Lots of opportunity to get extra, you know, to get extra lives and I guess extra items, although you really don't use the items much. I do like that they just call anything you get an item. Items are mostly apples that then you can use to throw at enemies, or if you save them, you get a bonus at the end of the round. I typically just use the, for lack of a better term, the butt bounce attack that Mickey Mouse has.
Yeah. Yeah. The butt bounce, kind of.
Yeah. I don't have a better term for that. Yeah. And then the Master System version, I guess, is kind of mechanically the same, but the level layout is different. I think it's okay. The stages are a little bit different. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this game?
I have a very vivid memory of going over to my buddy Craig's house as a kid. He was the first person I knew that had a Genesis. You know, he had it when, you know, before all the Sonic games, stuff like that came out. And I didn't really get the Genesis, you know, the appeal until I saw this game at his house, where I immediately thought, my Nintendo is a pile of garbage. For the same reasons mm-hmm. you described, just the art in this game, you know, it just really showed off what the Genesis could do in terms of how it could make something beautiful and really good use of parallax scrolling. It was probably the first time I ever noticed parallax scrolling on a video game console. Yeah, I really like this game. It kind of creeps me out how Mickey has that creepy smile while he's just, you know, taking out bad guys. Or, you know, yeah, he's like in this
dangerous setting. He always smiles.
Yeah, he's always smiling. It ends up being kind of creepy, kind of like the Berserk smile, you know. But yeah, just a really, you know, a dark and bright game, depending on what level you're on. And I did play Fantasia, which seems like, I know this game has a few spiritual successors, I think maybe mm-hmm. even one real sequel, but the Fantasia game, it feels like it's played on the same or made on the same engine, but its gameplay seemed way worse. It did a bunch of things that I thought were cool, where it had parallax scrolling in the foreground, stuff you would run behind and stuff, but I don't know if you played that one recently, but I actually like Castle of Illusion better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't like any of the sequels that much. I mean, there's like World of Illusion, which I didn't like as much. And the Sega CD one, Mickey, the Timeless Adventures, which is graphically a really cool game. But I didn't really like the gameplay as much.
Yeah. I think in all those games, it kind of went backwards from this. And, I have this on PS3 as well. There's kind of a remaster that's really good. It keeps almost the exact same gameplay, a bit smoother, and really just updated graphics. That just, it really works. And it's, you know, I probably bought it, I don't know if I got it. It may have been for free. If not, it was like a, you know, $2 or $3 game. And, can't recommend it enough. So yeah, I think we had two pretty good Game Club games this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what are you going to do next?
I was just checking our previous show notes. I'm going to do Super Pac-Man, a game that strangely reminds me of like, Thanksgiving week, because I think I bought Super Pac-Man at some crazy Black Friday sale years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally just a giant Pac-Man shaped joystick that has Super Pac-Man on it.
Nice.
No, it's a real thing.
I'm going for a game I already know you don't like, but this is by request, 4D boxing for DOS.
There you go. Super Pac-Man, I think, is a arcade only game. I don't recall that getting any other ports, although maybe if it turns out it's like an Atari ST port or something that I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember any, but we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, it definitely does not have like a 2600 port. even though it came out around the time when you think it would have.
Yeah. So if any of our listeners have played any of these games or have cool retro news or game suggestions or just want to say hi, have any cool retro maybe Raspberry Pi type projects, email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net, or Facebook.retrogameclub.net, or hit us on Twitter at RGC Podcast. Zach is very nice. He maintains our social sites for us. He does a fantastic job. We don't thank him enough for that. And I think we have some feedback this week.
Yeah, we got a few here. Let's see. I'll take the one from Majors here, talking about screenshots of Intellivision games. He mentions, which I don't know the setup here, LTO flash cart with a front end loader that contains a function to run Jay-Z Intellivision within the app. And then all you need to do with the app is point it to the... Yes, this sounds like a lot of the other Intellivision setup instructions, where it's like, here's this one really simple step, and then it's like 8 steps. Apparently this is a common problem, not being able to get good Intellivision screenshots. Also notes that Street Fighter the movie came out the same year that Street Fighter II the animated movie came out. And of course the animated movie is generally considered much, much better.
Yeah.
PC Engine port of Dynastic Hero only available in Japan. So apparently there is indeed a US port, but it's very, very expensive. Versus the Japanese version, which is under 50. I believe I bought it for like $12. Maybe it's more now that more people are into the TurboGrafx, but I got it pretty cheap. And if you're going to import a PC Engine game, I would definitely go with Dynastic Heroes being a big one. Some feedback on Rampage. So he played the Master System version and the Lynx version. I forgot the Lynx version existed. He said he enjoyed them a lot more now that he didn't have to spend 100 coins on them. It's very sad that you're not a fan of the Atari Lynx. He says the port of Rampage is one of the top titles for it. And the Master System port has FM music if you have the ability to play it. Play mechanics work well enough, and it's kind of on the easy side. And then Gunstar Heroes, he thinks, is a wonderful game that really put Treasure on the map. Treasure being the game company, not literal Treasure. he thinks it's a 10 out of 10 game.
I agree, yeah.
And notes that there is a follow-up to it on Game Boy Advance, which I forgot about.
Yeah, me too.
And social media question, favorite, least favorite genres? He says favorite shoot-em-ups, puzzles, and fighters. And he has never liked a Koei Sim or FMV game.
All right. Mark writes in, has a lot of very nice things to say, and he just recently binged all 67 shows in the past 4 weeks while being on a holiday from work.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was saying, wow, the 4 weeks of holiday. We don't get that here.
Yeah, I'm jealous. But he started listening to the podcast while building a MAME cabinet with a Raspberry Pi 4 running off some laptop power banks. So it lasts about 6 hours. That's actually really good. If you would, send us some pictures of that. I'd really like to see how you did all that. And he spent the majority of a lot of episodes wondering why he couldn't find games called East or Dragon Slayer. But it was due to our Midwest American accents. Uh-huh. And he realized we were saying East and Dragon's Lair. And... Yes. It made him laugh a little bit when he realized that.
Yeah. And it's, by the way, sometimes I am talking about the Dragon Slayer games because there's like a million of them.
Yeah.
People don't realize, like, Dragon Slayer was a franchise started by Falcom in the 80s, and there's a whole lot of games that are technically part of the Dragon Slayer franchise, although most of them have dropped Dragon Slayer from the name at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But they all have, like, if you look at, like, the Falcom family tree, and they've published a family tree picture. Like, the stuff that's coming out now, you know, Trails of Cold Steel 4 is part of that Dragon Slayer family tree.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Dragon Slayer, the arcade game we talked about previously.
Yeah. That is funny. He loves to play the Game Club games. He tries most of them out with his 6-year-old. And the one that did the best so far was Frogger 2, which actually really surprises me. He's in his 30s. He's a train driver in Victoria, Australia, and got into retro gaming 2 years ago, like he said, when he built that MAME cabinet. And first of all, Australia's gone, 16 days now with no... new virus cases, so I'm wildly jealous about where he lives and the fact that he also gets much better vacation than I do. And I think that he might be our first Australian writing in. That's correct. Yeah.
Possibly, yeah. I don't know.
And he thinks that he and I are some of the only two people in the world that enjoy 4D boxing, and that's why I picked that game for this Game Club game. So, I hope other listeners write in to tell us either he is correct or otherwise. But thanks so much for that email, Mark.
Yeah, and then Ross writes in to give us an update on PT. He confirms PT does, in fact, not work on the PS5. And it has to have been Konami going out of their way to block it from working. And he sends us a link to an AV Club article about PT being remade in Doom. Everything. What game hasn't been remade in Doom at this point?
And, I know.
Just as an FYI, all's not lost. If you want to play PT, there are a few other ways to do it. Someone recreated it from scratch on PC using Unreal Engine, and someone recreated it within the PS4, PS5 game Dreams. I do not know that game. I know the Dreamcast game Dreams.
The PS4 Dreams game is a game creator in PS4.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. Like, someone made an X-Wing game on it. Someone made Mario Odyssey in it. And they're real games. They're fantastic. So,
And there is no game called Dreams on Dreamcast, is there? I'm thinking of Nights into Dreams.
Oh, yeah, on Saturn.
On Saturday. It's not even on Dreamcast. I'm like completely wrong today about this.
Well, we're recording much earlier than we usually do, so we're all off this time.
Yeah, I've usually had more coffee by now.
I hope when I hit save on my audio, it actually saves. Or it'll just be a nightmare again. We do have some social media. What do we have on social media here?
We asked if anybody was buying the systems that launched this past week, like the Xbox Series X One. Wait, what is it called?
Xbox Series X.
Okay.
Or S, depending on which one you buy.
The X or S?
And
There's two of them? No,
yeah, there's two of them. So this Xbox Series S is the cheaper one, and the X is the more expensive one.
Is there an L or M too, or no?
Not yet.
Or PlayStation 5. That one I can remember.
Yes. And it's a big no.
No.
One person
Social media bought it.
Yeah.
Although someone did mention they just spent $2,000 upgrading their PC to have specs that I assume exceed both of those systems.
Yeah. But, great listener feedback this week. We love it. And not many people seem to write in more than once. We would love you guys to, write in your thoughts on our Game Club games and, give us some recommendations and stuff. So, again, that's Super Pac-Man and 4D Boxing we're playing this week. Email at retrogameclub.net. And I think that wraps it up.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.
Thank you.